Buenos días.
Buenos días, Vane. Welcome, everyone.
¿Cómo estamos hoy?
Acá, empezando un nuevo...
Yo estoy bien dormilona. I'm like, my eyes are still half closed because it's 8 a.m. where I live, and that is too early for me.
Well, it's 10:30 here for me, so I've had a whole life already. A whole day.
Amazing. Okay, yeah. And with that, welcome to Mangonada.
Okay, welcome. And we are your hosts, Carolina.
And Vanessa. And Mangonada is all about exploring and reclaiming culture through outdoor movement, delivering a sweet, salty, spicy artness all in one bite.
Amazing. Well, welcome. Welcome, welcome. So... how's training going? What are we doing, Vane? Where in the world is Vanessa?
Back home after a long, long stint of travel, and I'm excited to be running on my home trails again. I went for a nice trail run 2 days ago, and there was snow on the ground, which was really exciting.
Yay!
So it's still melting, but the shift is happening, and for now, I'm just enjoying the little bit of warm weather we have left. What about you?
I love that. Well, the leaves are all changing here, which is really super fun. It happens really fast though, and I twisted my ankle on Saturday going down some sketchy Brooklyn stairs, and I landed on my ankle that I injured earlier in the year. So I'm taking it a little bit chill, but I'm really enjoying. I found 2 years ago, I did this class called The Ness here in New York, and it's a rebounding, so like a small trampoline movement class. And it's so fun to jump on the trampoline that as one of my alternate to running sort of movement-based things that I want to incorporate into my training, I am incorporating those classes. And I'm so excited because jumping is just such a... I don't know. I love jumping.
Sounds really fun. I love a trampoline.
Yeah. So it's been a busy, busy time for running, and it's been a busy time for the... termination of our rights and the abuse of our rights.
So good. Yeah, I feel like it's a busy week and we've got a lot to talk about. So where should we start?
Well, first let's start. I'm going to start with something happy about the running world, where, you know, Bick's Backyard, for those that don't know what that is, a backyard race, which I love backyards, is a 4.1 mile race that you do every hour on the hour, and only the last person standing wins. And so it forces you to sort of strategize, and the win can only happen with the support of the others, right? Because you're each pushing each other. And so it ended actually yesterday for the men, and the German Ivo Tanja won with 114 laps, 475 miles,
wow.
Which is insane. And then the women, actually, the record was set this week as well with Sarah Perry, 95 laps, 395.83 miles. And there's no sleeping, you know, unless you strategize, there's no sleeping. You have to go on the hour, every hour on the start. And so it's pretty impressive. I think it's really, really cool. So there's that. That's really, and also another Great Britain breaking records that was set was the 24-hour World Championships held in Albi, France. And the record was taken by Sarah Webster. You know, and maybe later we can talk about what happened to the U.S. team and Camille Heron. We'll just get into it really, really quickly. But first, let's talk about raids. Or do you want to start with, why don't we start with what's happening in Wyoming, Vani?
Yeah, so we have like some news about ICE, and I live in Wyoming, which is a very Republican state, and the state government is passing a lot of enforcement and laws where basically local sheriffs and Wyoming Department of Transportation have to comply, and in a lot of ways, they have to act as ICE, which is really terrifying. So I've been looking into sort of local government and jurisdiction and all of these different things. But in July, Wyoming passed a law where the state no longer recognizes driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants issued by other states, which is really scary because if you get pulled over and you are brown and you have a driver's license from, let's say, Washington or New Mexico or California, where it's much easier for immigrants to obtain a driver's license, you could get arrested for that. And what's been happening, or sort of like the pipeline that is envisioned is like the local police arrest you for a routine traffic stop and then they call ICE. So that is terrifying. And I think, again, looking at fear with some hope and with some bravery and knowing that there are things we can do. So a cool example of that is in Durango, Colorado, the city council recently passed a resolution reaffirming the support of immigrants, working together with both the city council and the town council to see how local governments can help. Because in a lot of these cases, the city police and the sheriffs have primary jurisdiction, especially if it's a routine traffic stop of like, okay, am I going to let you go? You know, it's like whenever someone gets pulled over in general, am I going to get a ticket? Or are they going to let me go? And the same thing happens with immigrants and ICE. So I just think it's a good model, especially for me looking at smaller mountain communities, of how we can kind of come together and demand change or accountability or support for our immigrant communities from our local governments. So that's what I've been looking into.
Yeah, and Vani, I think it's so instrumental, you know, when folks in the running space have reached out to me saying, hey, what can we do for our community? Especially race directors, like the few race directors like Luke Nelson reached out, you know, who's like an amazing ally, PAL athlete, Patagonia athlete as well. The first thing I said was like, how's your relationship with the sheriff's office? Like, do you know your local police? And if you don't know your local police and the sheriff's office and whoever is going to be jurisdictionally in charge of the area where your race goes through, you need to get to know them. You know, I think
100%.
that's super important when you have the opportunity of building relationships with these people for years. It really pays off because you can, you know the local Mexican shop that you love where you take your family for like, I don't know, margaritas on Friday. And it's those relationships that will be instrumental when you question, right? Like they'll have to question, do I protect the people that live in my community or do I just subjugate to whatever federal law that has been blatantly like brought into a contract that the city agreed to and no one noticed? And so I think it's all about relationships and about community. I think it's harder when you're in a place like New York City where it really is about the numbers. It really is about being able to, something's happening, your corner community watch, group is the one that's really going to help you. Because those relationships with the cops, sure, I think I had very tight relationships with actually with police and with firefighters and my block in the city wherever I live, because you have to, right? It's, I'm going to do a block party. I got to go to the precinct and ask for a permit. And every year they're going to go who I am. And they're right. And so I think getting involved in your community really is the ultimate form of activism because that's how you build community. That's how you build those networks that you can lean into when there's a crisis. Yeah.
And what's been going on in New York?
Well, 2 days ago at 5:30 p.m., these tanks, the ICE tanks, came in and they basically about, they say between 40 and 50 agents, which is generally HSI or ICE or police or DA, you know, all of these agencies are sort of interchangeable. And after I spent some time digging on their programs, I'll share that in a second. But first, I want to finish about the raid. I'm not clear on how many people they arrested, but they essentially arrested whoever was there. Canal Street, where, you know, you have a lot of local folks selling, you know, fake Prada or whatever. It's a heavily tourist area. I was on my way to the city for a function and I got a text and a call. One of the texts was from my friend whose neighbor, her family member, US citizen, black man, was detained and they had no idea what to do. And then another friend called me and an immigrant that's in process for asylum was also detained in the area. I got multiple calls from some of my runners and students who were freaking out because, you know, now it's sort of everywhere. And the things that we're hearing that are happening in Chicago, that are happening in Portland, are now in LA, you know, in the fields. It's now here. There's no, you know, broad daylight, Canal Street, tourist area. So it's really frightening. And New Yorkers showed up and people started screaming and saying things, but that is not something that black and brown people or people in not that don't have citizen status can really do. you know? Right. I think, as we stressed in our previous episode, emergency plan of action is for everybody that is not white. And even if you are white and you are choosing to be a disruptor, as I think is your duty in this moment, you should have a plan of emergency action. You know, you will not be deported to another country because you belong here and you have a citizenship and like it's your right, but you can definitely be detained until somebody can prove to the authorities that you are a citizen and until they can be happy about the way that you showed you proved your citizenship. I don't think this person, I'm sure, had a driver's license, the citizen that was stopped, and that was not enough. So, you know, we're really entering new waters, and it's coming everywhere, right? When we have a budget of $47 billion, it's inevitable that this is going to happen, especially more if Zoran Mandani gets elected. So it's not going to be good. And I think we have to arm ourselves now, prepare ourselves now, and start building community.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think some of these more progressive states are seeing that loss of funding, or at least that threat. Also the threat of like the National Guard invading your city, which is really scary. And then some of the more conservative states are receiving all of this funding, like millions and millions of dollars being funneled in for ? I think like something that happened here recently too is the airport got like a several million dollar grant for infrastructure, but part of that grant unblocked DEI spending. So none of this money could be used for DEI. And two, mandated ICE cooperation, which basically said like, if this airport takes this money, you have to let ICE do whatever you want at this airport, period, full stop. Like, and I think, again, these are the things that come in like the breadcrumbs of a contract or whatever it might be. It's like, it's not necessarily going to be the initial headline, or it's not going to be like the initial reason for the grant. Like, this is just an infrastructure grant that has really nothing to do with ICE, but here we are. And so I think something to be vigilant about in terms of just like federal money coming in and going out of like, what is the fine print and what are we agreeing to? And again, going back to local government, like, can our city council stop that? Are they the ones who have to approve it? Is the town having to approve all these things? And where do they stand, knowing that? Where do their constituents stand?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think a lot of times what people are not aware, I'm not sure if we shared it in our last episode, these contracts with detention centers, with police, with whatever, there's always a little clause. And that clause and the way it's written can have huge repercussions, right? It is the difference between, are they building a detention center? And if they are building a detention center, or are they renovating an old prison or a mental institution that now, health mental institution that is now can be used to house people? Are they going to be paid by bed occupancy or by simply like a weekly fee, right? Or a monthly fee? And so those two are very different, right? Because if it's by occupancy, there's a huge pressure to make sure that you detain people for as long as possible so that you can reap as much out of the people that are detained. Or it doesn't matter how many people are there, you're still going to get the same money, the county, right?
Yeah.
And so, and the job opportunity, right? You're going to have a job whether you have two people or you have 100 people. And so,
yeah. And something else to think about too, even just like the infrastructure, is a lot of the jails, where the county jails, the state jails, where people are being housed for ICE and housed long term, were never built for that. And so it just like exacerbates how terrible the conditions can be. Because, for example, like here in Jackson, we have a county jail that's like so tiny. I haven't been inside of it personally, but I know for a fact that it's not built for people to live there long term. It's supposed to be like someone's there for 2 to 3 days and then they get transferred somewhere else. And so I think purposefully leaving people in these prisons and jails where the conditions are like just not built for that is part of the strategy, because they're trying to make conditions so bad that people choose to leave the country and give up whatever status they have or whatever asylum they're seeking or whatever their immigration status is, because yeah, they're just being totally worn down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the conditions are never, you know, unfortunately during the Obama years, he actually increased the amount of detention centers built at this time. I think it was like a negotiating sort of point with Republicans so he could pass DACA, or like not DACA, but like the Dreamers Act, the real like legalized, fully amnesty kind of thing. But then it became a war between DAPA and DACA. And those detention centers are, and those spaces are not meant to house people like indefinitely, right? But right. even the ones that are built are not built. You know, the Dilley, Texas, where I used to go and volunteer representing women and children that were being detained, that area has arsenic water. Like it's proven that there's arsenic in the water. And these wow. people were drinking that for almost a year while they were detained. Yeah. The kids sort of went to school, but nobody ever had access to look at the school. So we were really lucky to be able to negotiate bringing books through the church. It was through the church that I was able to bring books from Canticos and Little Libros, these two amazing companies owned by Tu Latinas, for the children. And we brought them to the church. And it was through the clergy that we were able to bring the books because they did not want us to bring books. And they were not really wanting to negotiate or do it, you know, like any of it. So the conditions, children are not meant to be kept detained, period, to start with. But then at least make sure that they can have access to the things that they should be able to have access, like a book in their own language. Mm-hmm. You know, I was horrified that they didn't even have a space where they could imagine what is out there, right? And so for me, doing that was so simple and it was so important also, because it is about dignity, the dignity of people, the dignity of these children. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there's just many places in which people can donate their time and their expertise. And so like lawyers should be activating in the space. Like if you're a runner, like find out like what areas do I run in and who's got jurisdiction over this so that I can make sure that other people that are not white can run in these places. And yeah. even it doesn't guarantee, I think that there's no guarantee for anybody anymore. And I think that's why we have to do the uncomfortable stuff. I told you I'm doing dinners every Friday that I don't really want to host because I'm tired come Friday. Mm-hmm. But it's really important for me to build community and to build people, bring people together that maybe don't come together, because this is the time to lean into community and to build those networks of mutual aid support.
100%. And I think, yeah, if you are a runner in a mountain town in the Rocky Mountain West, which a lot of us are. We love these lands and they're so special and beautiful. And, you know, we're drawn here for a reason. And places like Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Arizona, these are great places to practice advocacy because we're a little outnumbered in these Republican conservative states. And I think those of us who live here understand how hard and difficult that can be. But it's just like, it's so much worse for immigrants. And so I think like, yeah, taking the time to do the little extra research about what state laws and federal laws are being passed in your area and what that means to immigrants, because people might not know about them. And then like amplifying that and sharing it with your local community is also very important.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it's also like, you know, some of my runners that have been running in Manhattan and Brooklyn and the Bronx and all over, they're scared, you know. They're scared to run by themselves. They're scared to walk into certain areas. And I think that we all play a role in that. I think that we all have a role to play and we have to get uncomfortable and do the stuff that we kind of don't want to do because we're overrun by the nervous system and there's so much happening. But I invite you to, instead of repost something online that is angry, right? Like the ICE raids and the way that children are being treated and like, it was a 13-year-old kid that was detained by ICE after a school reported it to the police. And he was away from his mom for like 2 days. So this is the type of thing where find out if it's happening in your town, get involved. Like do something about it and start demanding, right? Demanding some answers. And I think that that's where we can really generate the difference. ICE agents, HSI, Euro, all of these people, most of them have I did the research and it's between 22 and 27 weeks of training. Unbelievable what little training they get. It's about 840 hours, I believe. In order for you to get a nail esthetician license in New York City, you have to have between 600 and 1500 hours. And so these people are not, you know, we can't play. Because it's just a lot of anger and xenophobia and patriarchy. And so we have to really outnumber them. And we really do. You know, so I think it's a matter of recognizing that this is going to get much worse. And so we need to make allies and find who in our block, who in our corner is with us, invite them over. And even, look, I argue that I went to law school in Oklahoma and there wasn't a person, honestly, that I met that I didn't like, even the ones that were exceedingly racist, because with time and getting to know me, they saw something in themselves that we could agree on. And it softened those hard edges of fear and anger. And I think that's the piece that we all have to challenge ourselves. Yes, there's a line, right? Humanity, like if you agree with bombing children in Palestine and destroying an entire nation and ethnic cleansing, like we can't agree on that. And it's hard to even build a bridge there. I think that's kind of really hard. But I think with others, you know, especially Trump supporters, I think we have to try and make ourselves uncomfortable and see if we can bring some of those people over and make them see the light, for sure. Even if they're in a cult.
No, I agree. And I think if some of you attended the No Kings protest last weekend, like that's a great first step, like we talked about on our last episode. If you're now listening to this podcast, that's a great second step. But we absolutely need everybody. We can't decide who to exclude and who to alienate, because that's how we become them. And I think the difference and our honestly saving grace is going to be finding that common ground and just getting everyone together, because we can't continue polarizing one another.
No, and that's what the platforms are doing, right? And there's so much AI happening right now. And like, they want us to be talking about Trump's AI generated, like pooping all over the King's marches. At the King's rallies. That's what they want us to be talking about, and not about, you know, the 37 people that have been killed by U.S. strikes on the Atlantic Ocean in waters that do not belong to the U.S. I mean, that is insane that that is not the main thing that we're talking about. And so I think we have to try to ignore the shiny thing that they're trying to put over here. And, you know, okay, yes, the Epstein files are important. And also, we already know he's a pedophile. We already know that all these people, and who knows who else is involved that has been trying to hide it. We already know that. So it's kind of like we need to focus more on, spend your energy in how can I build a better community? Where should I be investing? Who should I be donating? Who is the most fragile person in this moment that I can support? Is it trans rights? Is it immigrants? Like, what is dear to your heart that will motivate you to get involved in person, not on your phone? Like, I really encourage everybody to get off the phones and actually get out in the world, because that's creating a fake sense of relationship that we are not really cultivating. Because you really, it's like we're saying, like, you really have to see the work. When you see a person separated by its parent, I don't believe that you do not feel something. Yeah. Like, you cannot tell me that, well, they violated the law, so this is it, because you will feel it in your gut. And your gut will tell you this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, in no world should you be ripping a child away from a mom that all she did was look for a better future. Or she's seeking the people stopped and separated and kidnapped on 27 Federal Plaza. They came here legally. They are fighting for their case legally, following the laws. You cannot tell me that what has been happening in there, from the ripping apart of children and parents to the violations of having to drink water from the disgusting toilet because there's no water being served, to sexual abuse. Like, none of that you would agree with, period, because they are following the laws that you say they should be following. So in no world is this scenario okay. I don't care if you're a Republican or an independent. I think if you are a human and you truly hold on to your empathy, you will recognize that this is wrong.
Yeah, and I also think that we talk a lot about like being uncomfortable and getting involved and doing difficult work. But I also want to remind people that it's not always like this terrible task that we have to do. And we can do little things that are not only incredibly helpful for our community, but also healing to ourselves. So, for example, I volunteer with like a local group to take kids out skiing, and it is such a healing experience, not only for them, but also for me. Just want to remind folks that like working hard to remember to spend time outdoors and connect with the land and each other and nature and experience joy is a necessary part of the work that we're doing. And so it doesn't always need to be this like terrible thing that we're dreading. It can also be just like, who are we getting outside with and who can we bring along? Because right now especially kids, but kids of color, any people of color, like we need to feel joy too. And so how do we facilitate that? Because I know all of us are so good at doing that as athletes.
100%. And I think that that's also, I have this group that I do a class with, a writing class with, and the teacher was like, "Can you talk tomorrow to everyone?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And I'm going to talk about joy. And I'm going to talk about how, as runners, as artists, like we have a duty to make sure that we are leaning onto that joy, right? I'm getting ready to give away, I usually do this fall festival with Clay, and about 100 kids come out and they have a ton of fun. I don't know how many kids are going to come out when it feels so dangerous. So I'm actually packing, dry, air dry clay, and I'm sending them home with it so that they can continue to do an activity. It won't be like the collective joy of people and building together, which is really important, but at least they'll be able to have something to create at home. And it's about staying nimble, leaning into joy, and remembering that we have this one life. And we have bodies for a reason. And it's important to do those things, right? I agree with you, Vani. Like, and the outdoors is so healing, and we haven't even talked about the what's happening in Alaska with the floods and also the drilling and the access that has been basically granted to destroy these lands. But we can get into it in the next episode.
And I think
Yeah.
with that, we have to wrap. It's going to be a short one.
Yeah, but
But yeah, I think remind folks, or we want to remind folks to continue carrying that joy through all of the work that we're doing, because that's how it becomes sustainable.
absolutely. I think it's when you do a hard thing, you have to like pare it down with the joy and the happiness and the magic. All right, friends, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Nos vemos. Bye.
Chao, besitos.